Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Monday, November 6, 2017. I am Jason Powell. On the site today, John Moore's Impact Wrestling Bound for Glory hit list, plus my full review of Impact Wrestling Bound for Glory. We preview WWE Raw and all sorts of other things. The latest NWA 10 Pounds of Gold documentary series is available as well. But coming up after this brief break for non-members, Jake Barnett will join me to share his thoughts on last night's Impact Wrestling Bound for Glory. Okay, everybody, Impact Wrestling Bound for Glory is in the books, and this is billed as the company's biggest event of the year. I'm curious, I want to start with this, Jake. You were not assigned to cover this show. You willingly purchased this pay-per-view. You said you did so, we were talking beforehand, through Fight TV's app, and you had a better experience than I did. I had some issues late in the show, but I've used Fight before, and it usually goes very smoothly. But what was it that inspired you to order Impact Wrestling Bound for Glory?
I just wanted to keep up with the show, to be honest with you. I don't think I have given Impact a terribly fair shake over the last 6 months or something. I'm way behind on television most of the time. I heard about the new creative regime, wanted to see what they had planned for Bound for Glory, and I just kind of wanted to see how this was going to come across, having moved the show to Canada and essentially moved the promotion to Canada, and how the fans would react.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going to lean heavily on Jake here, because I will be on JR's podcast. I already did roughly 45 minutes of members' audio on Sunday night. Of course, all the details for membership to the ad-free version of the site available at ProWrestling.net. But I will be on the Ross Report podcast that'll drop Tuesday evening. So rather than repeat a bunch of stuff, I want to lean heavily on Jake. I'll chime in on a couple of things. But so you order the show because it's kind of the beginning of the new era. It's the biggest event of the year and all of that. Did it live up to your hopes and expectations?
It's difficult because I didn't have really high expectations going in, and I was just kind of seeing where the company had been at and seeing how Anthem has been taking care of their business. About they keep reporting that they're hemorrhaging money. The talent seems to be falling off. They just let go of all of their referees. They're moving the company to Canada. The issues that come with that in terms of visas, and we saw issues crop up with that already. And so I guess my expectations were fairly low, and I still think they failed to meet them. It kind of boggles my mind how they still make the same bad creative decisions over and over again, even though it seems like they've had plenty of opportunities and fresh creative teams and new talent influxes, and it just nothing ever seems to change. It's one of the more frustrating things about watching TNA is that it seems like they've had ample opportunities and second chances and third chances, and it doesn't really seem to sink in that people want competitive matches and clean finishes, and we just rarely see that there.
What was the low point of this show?
For me personally, the rambling Alberto Del Rio promo that went nowhere, where he was basically casting himself as a victim because he was embroiled in a domestic abuse situation that the company was forced to kind of push him aside for, and he wasn't terminated, but they suspended him indefinitely without pay and everything. I don't know how not only Del Rio ethically can come in and talk about it the way he did, but the company would decide that this is a good idea, to get heat on the character. It was just bizarre to me.
Yeah, I think they made the right call in bringing him back as a heel based on the crowd's reaction to him. He was not popular before he did anything on the show, but I'm with you when it comes to the subject matter. I also felt like he had a very basic mission statement to blame others, blame the company for not checking on his well-being and things of that nature, and say he's going to ruin the show. And yet he was out there for what felt like an eternity just rambling about about those issues, and then taunting Jeremy Borash for some reason. What was that about?
I can't quite – was he targeting him as somebody who was supposedly disloyal to him?
I guess.
I think that was where they were going with it, but it wasn't explicitly spoken about, and then Borash didn't really respond to it as the show went on commentary or really clarify the story. And so that was another one of the little detail elements that was just really missing there. And overall, I think, you know, Del Rio's performance, it didn't really click, even if you hated the subject matter and you aren't a fan of, you know, his character. It wasn't like a really great heel promo. It just felt like a really uninspired effort to me.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy that at all, and I didn't get it when it came to picking on Borash. It's not like they had established beforehand that, yeah, these guys were friendly at one point. There's been nothing on the television show that I recall, Jake, do you, on Impact, that where there was some friendship between these two that they were playing on from a storyline standpoint?
No, this felt like something completely new. I don't recall anything between them in the past that would have indicated that there was a betrayal here. I mean, it didn't seem like they were great friends to begin with, and unless, you know, they're trying to allude to something, you know, the backstage, or because I know Del Rio kind of went after the media a little bit, and I don't know how they want to interface Borash with that end of the story, but there's just so much going on there, and he covered so much ground. And it's hard to really call it a focused story at all.
Yeah, the idea of going after them, I mean, it's a heel promo, but I'm just like, but there was an investigation. And as the information was released, it was reported. And so, for all I know, he's just like, it just was a heel promo to him. But if there's any bad vibes with the media over this, it's like, well, what did you expect people to do other than report the story? But at any rate, what was the high point of the show?
I think it was LAX versus OVE, to be honest with you. That match actually was a lot of fun. And I mean, it was dangerous at points. And Sami Callihan's debut kind of came out to crickets, and that was unfortunate. But the overall match, I think it might have been one of the only times on the show they really had the crowd invested. You know, they really had to work for it. I mean, don't get me wrong, they really had to take some risks and take some damage. But honestly, it was just a great garbage match in comparison to the Monsters Ball, which felt like an eternity in and of itself with Abyss and Grado. I mean, it's a night and day comparison between the two.
Did you come away from LAX and OVE feeling like there was a double turn at the end? Because I honestly couldn't tell. I didn't think the announcers, the broadcast team, I thought they were fine throughout the night, but I kind of felt like they did viewers a disservice here. I didn't know what they were going for. Are OVE heels now?
I mean, maybe. It's really hard to tell because I think they were hoping that they would have a hot crowd this would have a lot more impact, not only the Sami Callihan debut, but OVE taking shortcuts to win. And there was just not that much reaction for either of those events. And so I think if there was a double turn, they could very easily walk it back because there was no clarity whatsoever given by either the competitors or the announced team as to what exactly was going on there.
What would you do if it was your call?
Honestly, I think LAX is far better as heels, but I guess it depends on what their future plans are for Sammy and how big of a player they want him to be in the company overall. Because if he's just going to be a part of OVE, I think you could go either way with it. But I think LAX and Conan are far better as heels, and it would be a shame to see them try to put them as baby faces at this point.
Yeah, it's tricky because they're also the coolest act in the company, and OVE, just quite frankly, is not. You know, that whole Ohio versus everything, I don't think it registers to 49 states. And now they're in Canada. The reason I was left wondering is it seemed like they were taunting the crowd a little bit afterward. And, okay, they had the angle before the match just showing what was supposed to be Homicide, knocked out backstage to explain his absence. Diamante wasn't there. So Conan's the only person in LAX's corner. And I guess he did a little bit of interfering or something, whatever you'd say, but it wasn't enough where it felt like it was justified. And I don't look at him right now as an active wrestler because, quite frankly, he's not. It's been a long time. So he's just kind of playing a manager role. And when all of a sudden Sami Callihan comes out to help OVE, it felt like a 3-on-2 situation for the babyfaces. And I just didn't really come away feeling like it was necessary as far as like OVE, just the story of the match, it didn't feel like he was needed. So it felt like they were gang attacking the gang, if you will.
Yeah, I think the intent here was a double turn. I just don't think it worked on the crowd. They just weren't all that interested. I don't know, and because the same thing happened later on with Jimmy Jacobs, so that maybe this just wasn't a very independent wrestling-tuned crowd, because it really didn't seem like they had any idea who those two were, and I think it sort of spoiled those two moments, what could have been bigger if they had a different crowd in front of them.
The defense, somebody on Twitter attended the show. I don't have it handy. I'd give them credit, but they made it seem like the crowd really couldn't see Jimmy Jacobs. A good portion of the crowd couldn't see Jimmy Jacobs anyway, because all he did was come out on the stage. And my argument for that is, well, when he came out on the stage with a spotlight on him, there would have been some reaction from the people who did see him. And there just really wasn't one. So some people couldn't see him. And all he did was walk down the ramp. They had kind of a weird split between where the broadcast team sits. For those who didn't see the show, it's comparable to where the Raw broadcast team sits on WWE television. But it wasn't like the stage was connected to where they were. So he walks down the ramp and then walks back up along the guardrail to get to where the broadcast team is. So it's understandable that people some people didn't see him in the building. But am I being too harsh in this? It just didn't seem like those who did see him saw this as a big deal, unfortunately.
Yeah, I didn't get that impression either. And I guess it could have been partly the audio mix, which was kind of poor.
Yes, it was.
It didn't really seem like the crowd was mic'd all that well, and so we may have gotten a skewed impression of what was going on, based on that alone. But it really, they showed people, visually, they cut to the crowd several times, and there was just a whole lot of, who am I looking at here? And it really was kind of, a shame, because I think, Jimmy Jacobs is a, he's a nice get for Impact, and he could be a valuable performer and a contributor to creative if they want him to be. He had some success with that in WWE. So it's not that I don't, I'm not high on the signing. It just did not get a reaction in the building, at least from what I could see.
Agreed. And boy, after watching this show, I think they need all the help they can get creatively. More on that in a little bit. Gail Kim wins the Knockouts Championship. She beat Sienna and Allie in a triple threat. It was supposed to be a four-way with Taryn Terrell. I would have found a reason. I would have had, I think they have new women debuting at the show. I would have come up with some storyline to where one of the heels takes out Allie before the match or something, because it just didn't feel, it just felt like this could have easily been Gail Kim against Sienna. But Gail does win the championship. It's supposed to be a feel-good moment. She's Canadian. They were labeling this as her last match out of the blue. Unless I missed something, it was always her last Bound for Glory match. Now they're making it seem like this was it. So there's a missed opportunity that they really didn't drive home effectively if this truly was it for her. And then, Jake, she wins the title. It's supposed to be this big moment. And we see about 5 seconds of her celebration. And I think they were rushing at this point. I think they were running short on time. But of all places, it just... That was like the one feel-good moment of this show, and they completely blew it.
Do you think they were running long?
Yeah,
based on...
I do.
Okay, so why did they insert that extra X Division match then? Because they already had to pull Rosemary and Taya for the visa reasons or whichever personal reasons she had. And then they added that back in, and then they were rushing through the whole show, because there wasn't really a great amount of transition time between any of the segments, unless you were setting up the cage match, for American Top Team and Moose and whatnot. So I honestly don't quite get it. I mean, if it was this big moment for her, and at least near her retirement and her final appearance on TNA's biggest show, they just don't seem to do a very good job of letting people say goodbye. And I don't quite know why that is.
No, and, they did say we'll hear from her on Impact this week, so at least there's that. But again, it just felt like a missed opportunity on this pay-per-view for a cool, feel-good moment. I also, even if they were running long and they just felt like they had no choice, why do you put this match on before the cage match? You know, if they wanted to stick with the Gail Kim celebration, so you stick with that, and then you go to that long delay where they set up the cage. It just kind of seemed like a poor decision in terms of laying out the card in that manner. But I guess we'll see what they do with her on Impact. I think this was her final match. I don't know. I did try to find out from the Impact website this morning. We're recording this going on 1 o'clock Central, 2 o'clock Eastern, so they may have updated it, but as of this morning, it was still like Bound for Glory tonight, so it's like the old Ring of Honor website where they kind of update it the day after when they feel like it. But they, you know, that cage match, Moose and Stefan Bonner facing Lashley and King Mo, Dan Lambert and the mostly nameless American top team fighters with them, not nameless in the MMA world, but nameless on Impact Wrestling. Your thoughts on this one?
I mean, it just wasn't what I was hoping it would be. I mean, I didn't think Bonner gave a particularly good performance, and King Mo was all over the place. And so it was essentially up to Moose and Lashley to kind of carry the match. And I think Moose has made some decent strides in the time that he's been wrestling, but he really isn't where I thought he would be for a guy who's been training for, is it going on 4 or 5 years now? Like he still just doesn't look that crisp in the ring to me, and I'm not sure if I'm the only one who feels that way or not, but there just wasn't a whole lot about this match that I dug. And as funny as Dan Lambert can be on the microphone, it just wasn't that great of a sell for this feud either.
No, I never got into this, and I do freely admit Dan Lambert is a better promo than I think anyone anticipated. But last night in audio, I said it's like watching someone's dad out there cutting a wrestling promo. He doesn't have any kind of a look to him. He doesn't have any real charisma, in my opinion. So it's just a guy with deep pockets that I think TNA or Impact Wrestling in this case is putting on television, and my guess is in hopes of maybe him becoming an investor in this thing. I don't know that, but anytime I see, all right, this guy's known for having money, and suddenly they're putting him on a wrestling show, whether it's Impact or damn near anywhere else, like, I wonder what's going on there. So I just never got into this. I thought, I'm with you on Moose in general, but I did think he had a couple of big dives that were pretty crowd-pleasing. I just kind of watched this match feeling like it was a big train wreck. It was chaos, and I couldn't wait for it to be over.
Yeah, that's kind of my thoughts, too. I didn't think Mo and Bonner added a lot to the match, to be honest. There was one sequence where, like, they were trying to emulate MMA, and it's like two MMA fighters, and they screwed up an arm bar, and I just laughed. I just could not believe what I was seeing. I think, Moose made as much of an effort as he could to give that match some motion, because otherwise it just didn't feel like they were doing a whole lot in the ring, unfortunately. And I like Lashley too. I mean, there was a point when Lashley was holding the championship where I thought he was having some of the best efforts of his career.
Yeah.
I hope they find a place for him, and I don't know how tied he's going to be to what they're doing with Lambert and America's Top Team, but he's a gem. They should be focusing more on what Lashley can do, because he's great.
Yeah, that's one of the frustrating parts about this show for me. It's just the way this was built, I don't think they got anything out of Lashley. As far as, they've damaged him with this whole MMA storyline. It's just not compelling television. And then you had three former world champions in what to me felt like a rather meaningless six-man tag with the AAA wrestlers, EC3, James Storm, Eddie Edwards. Those are three guys that if you put them in singles matches or just something that feels more meaningful, will make a difference on a show like this. We don't need to spend a lot of time on that one, Jake, but was it just me, or did, like, Pagano not want to be there?
That was my impression, too. I was just watching it, and his offense just looked as lazy as it could get. And I'm not sure what the issue was, but, like, he very clearly, like, even the dive to the outside, it just seemed, like, half-assed all the way. I couldn't quite pick up if there was like some communications issues, but he looked angry during the entrance, and then he was kind of bickering with somebody at ringside waiting to tag in. There was something going on there.
Yeah, I don't know if he wasn't happy about being the guy taking the loss. I have no idea, but it just The other guys were, everyone else seemed to work hard. He, like, the storyline was that EC3 was being pouty and didn't really want to be teaming with Edwards and Storm. He came around. But the funny thing is, it was like, Pagano was doing that for real, it seemed like.
I don't
think it was scripted at all. Main event of this show, my God, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Jake, they just can't deliver a good, clean main event finish. This is the biggest show of their year. And they actually had Alberto El Patron interfere and basically help Eli Drake win the title, but he doesn't like him either because he's a paper champion, according to Alberto. So he did lay him out with, I think, a title belt shot, if memory serves. But he ultimately ended up pulling Drake on top of Johnny Impact to win the match. I still haven't gone back and watched it. This is where my buffering issues were at their worst. I did see the finish, and that, quite frankly, was all I needed to see. But from a quality standpoint, how was this?
I thought it was passable. I think... You know, Johnny Nitro. Why was I going to say Impact gave a strong performance. I wasn't terribly impressed with Eli Drake. I think part of that was the facial expressions that he puts on in the ring just kind of strike me as more goofy than serious. And I think he, being a world champion, should be serious. And so that kind of threw me off. But it was pretty good. I mean, up until the finish. I mean, it wasn't fantastic by any stretch, but it was an enjoyable wrestling match to watch. And I think the thing that really soured me on it was the chair shot to the head, for one.
One show.
Yeah. I think I'm not sure if the chair was gimmicked. It looked like it broke as soon as it hit. And so maybe there was something going on there to give Johnny Impact a little bit of cushion. But it really looked, it was so unnecessary. It wasn't required. And just the way the whole finish went down, it just reeked of just old school TNA screwball stuff. Like, if this is your biggest show of the year, you shouldn't be ending it with a pitch to get people to watch your TV show. It should be the closing of an angle, and it really didn't feel like that whatsoever.
And this is their latest restart. It's like, all right, not every viewer is going to know the behind the scenes details, but for the diehard wrestling fan that I think they're down to, they're fully aware there's a new creative regime, and the number goes down each time that we have one of these creative shakeups, and people have just lost hope in this company. But I'm sure there were some people who gave this a chance, as it sounds like in part you did, because of the creative shakeup. And what do they deliver? The same old crap, the same old TNA finish. You can call it Impact Wrestling. This was a TNA finish. It's astonishing to me that no matter who is in control, with the exception of, I would say, the most of 2016, when it was John Gaborik heading the creative team, but really the grunt work was done by Dave Lagana and Matt Conway. I got to point out, because you read the comment section and it reads like office officials are defending the product, or all out fanboys who watch Impact Wrestling like it's their hometown football team. For anyone who goes, "Oh, you guys are just railing on TNA and poor Impact Wrestling," go back and read our reviews in 2016. Listen to our audios. There were many times that I know John Moore and I both had said Impact Wrestling was our favorite television show at that point, because they were doing some good things. They weren't doing this nonsensical crap that has just been a plague to this company. But here we are, Scott D'Amore, Sanjay Dutt and company taking over. Gaborik is part of this too. They're taking over, and what do they give us? Another cheap, crappy finish to their version of WrestleMania. I just sat there. I wanted to be stunned, but I kind of knew it was coming when El Patron said he was going to ruin the show. But Jake, how can someone who takes over this company, is fully aware of its history, and supposedly all the negatives of this company's history, actually think this is a passable finish to your biggest show of the year?
I don't have a great explanation for you, or why the closing shot to the show would be Del Rio on the ramp and not, anybody in the ring, or what. The focus was completely on a guy who didn't even compete on the show, and it was just very, very bizarre. I mean, if I had been somebody in that creative team and I had watched the promo that Del Rio had cut earlier in the show, I would have been furiously figuring out a way to not have it finish the way that it was planned to finish, because that was, I mean, there was just nothing good about it, period. I mean, I guess Del Rio has star power, and if that's the focus of, you know, the internal corporate directives that they have to promote these guys that they're paying all this money to, then that's one thing. But from a artistic standpoint, the effort he put in with that promo earlier in the show didn't warrant the putting him right back in the main event again. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
I'm guessing it's, oh, well, but we're building to a triple threat. Well, you don't use your biggest pay-per-view events of the year to build to some TV triple threat match. It's stupid. You don't have Eli Drake have his title saved in this manner. It doesn't put heat on El Patron. It doesn't put heat on Eli Drake. It puts the heat on this company for making another dumb booking decision. I just can't believe that they just can't figure this out. So yeah, chair shots to the head in 2017, another TNA finish to the main event. What do you give this for a letter grade, Jake?
I mean, there are parts of this company that I still enjoy. You know, I liked the OVE and LAX match. I think there's some promise in the X division. I still like EC3 and James Storm. You know, as bad as they've been misused, I think it's fantastic that Rosemary is as over as she is. You know, with her character work, I mean, there are some bright spots in Impact Wrestling. So I don't want to make it sound like I just hate everything that's going on.
Exactly.
But the trend is not good, and you know, especially when you read about their financial situation and how, you know, Anthem purchased TNA in hopes that it would help them improve the status of their streaming network Fight, and now you have them basically dismantling Fight to keep TNA alive because it's hemorrhaging money. It's just not a great look from the outside looking in. And I know there are probably talents within TNA that are very upset and are taking it very personally, the things people are saying about the show, but it just was not that entertaining. And for a 3-hour wrestling show that you're expecting people to pay $50 for in 2017, I don't know how you could call it anything less than a disappointment. So I'm just going to give it a D.
I give it a big fat F, and it's just, so much of it is because of that main event finish and just the horrible taste it leaves in people's mouth. I just don't know how you can be that blind to go ahead with and think that's a passable finish for this company on their biggest show of the year. It was everything on the show bad? No. The six-way opener was, you know, fine. This is the X division match, and as you mentioned, the tag match. I felt like that was the best match of the show. There's moments here and there, but I'm sorry, you can't end the show with another screw job title match finish and expect people to think that, hey, new era, things are changing for the better. And so for that reason, I just give it a rare F. I think that was a horrible mistake. And hopefully this next batch of tapings is going to be better, Jake. I mean, it can't be worse than what we've been seeing on TV, where they bounce around from bad footage to bad footage from various promotions that don't even play into the storylines they're telling on the actual show.
Yeah, I really hope so, too. I mean, that was a real shame how they had to package together TV just to get enough content together. And it's, you know, I'm assuming now that they have an opportunity to tape over the next few days in Ottawa that they'll be able to put together enough footage from, you know, to get through now. And I think until January is when they plan on taping for it.
And you can follow Jake online at Barnett Jake. Of course, follow the brand at Pro Wrestling Net. Take a moment and subscribe to our podcast. Give us a rating on iTunes, anywhere else that handles those types of reviews. It really helps spread the word about this podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. And I will be back on, actually later on today, with the Q&A audio show for .NET members and my Raw audio review coming up later on tonight. Until next time, everybody, thank you for listening. Take care.